He's a psychologist, an author, and a veteran broadcaster. But most importantly, he's a dad. Welcome to Dr. Bill Meyer Live on the Faith Radio Network. Stay tuned for a faith and culture connection, a biblical perspective on current events, and practical family advice with psychologist Dr. Bill Meyer. You're listening to A Best of Bill Meyer Live on Faith Radio.
Well, hello there, and welcome to an encore edition of Dr. Bill Meyer Live. It is so great to have you with us today on this Saturday in the Upper Midwest, or on Sunday if you're listening to our rebroadcast. Today, we're going to be talking to a former government official who has written an incredible book that explores how following Jesus remakes your world. His book is called Upended, and his name is Jed Medefind, and we'll be talking to him in just a bit. First, though, thought we'd take a look at a few faith and culture-related stories in the news this week. Are American kids watching less TV? Well, the answer is yes and no. According to a story on PluggedIn.com, television watching is actually going down among kids ages 11 through 16. A new study was published in the journal Pediatrics, and it found that kids that age now watch about 2.4 hours of television a day. Now, that's down from the 3.1 hours they were watching a decade ago. But the study doesn't take into account how television and TV-like media is changing. For instance, it doesn't consider YouTube clips or TV that's watched on computers or tablets or phones. Melanie Schreffler is a columnist for MediaPost.com, and she says, teens are indeed watching less on TV sets, but they are still actively engaged with shows. They're just using new ways to watch TV that fit their lifestyles. In other culture news, here's a question for you. Are you feeling mad, sad, glad, or scared? Scientists have found that the most prevalent emotion expressed online is anger. Well, at least in China. Researchers at Baihang University studied the Chinese social network Weibo, which is a platform that resembles Twitter and actually has about twice as many users. What they found is that anger was the most influential emotion in online interactions. Over a six-month period, the researchers sorted 70 million messages into several different emotional categories: anger, joy, sadness, and disgust. Well, they found that sadness and disgust were relatively non-influential, while happy messages were more likely to cause joy among followers and motivate them to forward them on to somebody else. Now, rage was the most likely to spread across social media, creating a ripple effect. In fact, they say it could spark irate posts with up to 3 degrees of separation from the original message. So, before you tweet something today, take a deep breath, count to 10, and remember these words from Proverbs 29:11. A fool always loses his temper, but a wise man holds it back. Interesting research. Well, we do receive emails here at Faith Radio, and if you'd like to send us an email with a question about marriage or parenting or family issues, just go to our website at myfaithradio.com and look for the contact link. Receive this one from Carrie in Bloomington, Minnesota, and she says, Dear Dr. Bill, my mother recently told me that my one-year-old son should not have a bath after dinner because that's somehow unhealthy for him. In fact, she said she heard about that from Focus on the Family. But I haven't read anything that says it's wrong to give kids a bath in the evening, presumably after dinner, as part of their bedtime routine. What do you think? Well, Carrie, I hate to break this to your mom, but she never heard anything like that on Focus on the Family. In fact, when I worked at Focus, I even suggested on the daily broadcast that a bath after dinner can be part of a good bedtime routine. Now, I remember back when I was a kid, my mom used to tell us not to go swimming for at least 1 hour after eating. Supposedly, there was a danger that all of our limbs would freeze up with cramps and we would drown a horrible death. Well, it appears that is an old wives' tale, too. Pediatricians do not express any concern about children going swimming after eating. There is one bath time caution that every parent should be aware of, and that's never, ever leave an infant or toddler alone in a bathtub, not even for a second. Every year, tragically, hundreds of babies drown in bathtubs and swimming pools and even in small amounts of water left in buckets. It is just so tragic and so easily avoided. So again, moms and dads, never ever leave a baby in a bathtub even for a second. Now, bath time can be an incredibly fun bonding time for parents and babies. Anybody who's had a baby knows that. In fact, I can recall when our son Joseph was a toddler, if we even mentioned the word bath, his little face would light up and he would go running to get his favorite bath toys. So Carrie, assure your mom that there is absolutely nothing wrong with giving a baby a bath. Thanks so much for writing to us. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Bill Meyer. Coming up next, our interview with Jed Medefin on his book, Upended.
We're glad you've tuned in for Dr. Bill Meyer Live, and we'll get to today's program in just a moment. First, an update on some faith news.
Pastor Chuck Smith gave his last sermon at Calvary Chapel in Costa Mesa, California on Sunday. He was seated and had trouble breathing. His sermon title, Be Strong in the Faith.
It doesn't matter what the prognosis is. We know, Lord, that you are able. And we're trusting, Lord, in you.
Pastor Chuck Smith had battled lung cancer for the past 21 months and died in his sleep on Thursday morning. He was 86.
Thank you, Lord, for the wonderful promises, the rich and precious promises, whereby we have become partakers of your divine nature.
He led the congregation in singing the benediction after his message.
The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace.
Chuck Smith founded Calvary Chapel in 1965. His church's openness to hippies and spiritual seekers helped it grow and become a leader in contemporary Christian music. A new movie opens in theaters called Grace Unplugged. It's about a young worship leader who dreams about becoming a big star outside the church walls. 18-year-old Grace Trey grew up singing in church, where the worship leader is her father, a former famous pop star who gave up the wild life when he became a Christian. But despite her father's objections, Grace is determined to taste the kind of stardom she's always dreamed of in Hollywood. Film director Brad Silverman talked with CBN News.
Grace is really lured by fame, lured by the world and success and making a name for herself. And in her specific story, you know, she really has a change of heart and, you know, comes to find out that living for family and for God is a much more fulfilling way to live for Grace.
Grace Unplugged opens in theaters today. The Fellowship of Christian Athletes, known as FCA, will be hosting an event next Wednesday for high school and college athletes. Fields of Faith will take place on school athletic fields around the country.
It's a gathering of those that believe, not just athletes and not just coaches, but really all believers in the community coming to the field, to that public place in most communities that people recognize to read the Bible, share their personal stories of the impact of the Bible on their lives and how it's changed them, maybe have some music, and it's just a declaration, if you will, of how good God is and what he's doing in the lives of those that read and believe in his word and in who he is.
FCA began in 1954 and now has 4,000 paid and volunteer staff working at FCA camps and high school and college huddle groups. You're listening to Highlights from the Faith Radio Network. I'm Don Ruff.
It's now known that emotional development in children is directly related to the presence of warm, nurturing, sustained, and continuous interaction with both parents. And anything that interferes with that vital relationship with either parent can have lasting consequences for a child. For example, one landmark study revealed that 90% of children from divorced homes suffer from an acute sense of shock when the separation occurred, including profound grieving and irrational fears. 50% reported feeling rejected and abandoned. And indeed, half the fathers never came to see their children 3 years after the divorce. One-third of the boys and girls feared abandonment by the remaining parent, and 66% experienced yearning for the absent parent with an intensity that the researchers described as overwhelming. Most significantly, 37% of the children were even more unhappy and dissatisfied 5 years after the divorce than they had been at 18 months. In other words, time didn't heal their wounds. That's the real meaning of divorce. It is certainly what I think about with righteous indignation when I see infidelity and marital deceit portrayed on television as some kind of exciting game for two. Some excitement, some game.
Hear more at MyFamilyTalk.com.
You're listening to A Best of Bill Maier Live on Faith Radio. It's Dr. Bill Maier Live on Faith Radio. Get ready to join the conversation. Now let's join Dr. Bill Maier live.
And you can join that conversation by calling us at 877-93-FAITH. Write that number down. I'm hoping we're going to get some like little refrigerator magnets with our phone number on it for Faith Radio. So, you know, people have it in their kitchen. They can put it on their dashboard so they'll never forget it. But it's pretty easy to remember, 877-93-FAITH. As I mentioned, if you call in this hour, you don't have to go on the air necessarily, but if you call in, and give us your name, your address, and your phone number, we will enter you into a drawing for a book by this hour's author, and you're going to love this book. It's called Upended, and the subtitle is How Following Jesus Remakes Your Words and Your World. We have three copies of the book to give away later on this hour. So again, anybody who calls in, give your name, address, and phone number. And if you have a question for our guest this hour, we'd be more than happy to pass that along to him. So please feel free to do that. Well, Jed Medefend is the president of Christian Alliance for Orphans. It's a coalition of 130 organizations working together to inspire and equip Christians worldwide for adoption, foster care, and global orphan initiatives. Previously, Jed led the White House Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives as special assistant to President George W. Bush. He has held a range of posts in the California State Legislature. He has worked, studied, or served in more than 30 countries, and we are honored to have Jed on Faith Radio today. And Jed, welcome.
Well, it's great to be with you.
Great to have you on. What part of California are you from, Jed?
Right smack in the middle. So there's no beaches and movie stars here. It's kind of a more of a farming area, but it's great, and it's good to be near family here. Really love it.
Where? What town?
Merced is the name of the town.
Yeah, I worked in Fresno for several years there, Jed, so I'm very familiar.
The raisin capital of the world there, huh?
It is. In fact, when I was in college, I dated the Raisin Queen. But that's another story entirely. Well, Jed, it's so great to have you, and I just love this new book, Upended. It's written with your co-author, and I'm going to try to pronounce his name. If I butcher it, you tell me. Eric Locsmo?
Locsmo.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Locsmo. You got to admit, the spelling of his name and your name is a little unusual.
Yeah,
Locsmo.
Neither of us made it easy for you. Sorry about that.
That is no problem whatsoever. Tell us about your work in the White House, Jed.
Yeah. I got to serve with President Bush, leading his faith-based and community initiative, and just really a true privilege there, Bill. You know, I feel like President Bush was very much the same man behind, closed doors when the cameras weren't there, when the reporters weren't watching, the same character that you saw in public. In fact, maybe more himself, more caring, more committed to the dignity of the office, more of a sense of he's not the president forever. It's just a trust, a kind of a sacred trust before the American people and God. And so I just really respected that integrity. And, you know, I'm sure history will look back and see some of the decisions he made and say they were mistakes and others that were really right on. But the man, I really deeply respected him. I'd say just about everyone else who worked closely with him would say the same.
How many years were you there, Jed, in the White House?
So I worked in the administration for 4 years and in the White House for two.
And how did you end up in the administration? That's a fascinating story, I'm sure, in and of itself.
Yeah, kind of a long story, but the short of it was that I was actually working in California, kind of in both the political world, working in the state legislature, and then also on an initiative that helped small nonprofits in California develop their programs and be more effective with their work serving the needy. And so when a position came open in the Bush administration, I didn't think I'd have a chance for it. But a friend out there said, hey, you know, that combination of the government work plus the nonprofit sector work was what they were looking for, and really trying to reform government to make government more effective by shifting away from government-centric models and bureaucracy towards small local nonprofits. And so they ended up hiring me, and so we moved cross-country. At that point, I'd been in Sacramento, and we took up residence on Capitol Hill and really, really enjoyed those 4 years out there.
Now, you know, I remember during those years, I was, first of all, very excited to hear about what President Bush had in mind, what he intended for the church, for nonprofits, for community organizations to really pick up the slack, and that we wouldn't depend as much on government programs, because I'm sure you would agree that one of the issues is you get a bloated bureaucracy, and they're not nearly as effective as a boots-on-the-ground local group that really knows the needs.
Absolutely. That was really the central premise of the faith-based and community initiative. It was that, you know, government, while certainly government plays a vital role in setting a context in which families and businesses and nonprofits can thrive and can deliver certain basic social safety net, you know, services and you know, for instance, Social Security. You know, the government can kind of at least deliver a Social Security check on a large scale in a relatively efficient fashion. But when it comes to the deepest needs of someone who's really struggling, a drug addict, an at-risk youth that's coming from a gang, you know, infested area, the needs of those individuals are far deeper than government can ever touch, than bureaucracy could ever hire people to serve. That really takes the local passion and creativity and accountability of caring individuals that are working in faith-based groups, in local nonprofits that aren't religious, but people that are really rooted in the community. And so President Bush's effort was to shift the locus of federal efforts to help the needy away from government and bureaucracy and toward those local community healers, both in the U.S. and around the world.
Okay, so here's a hard question, a controversial question for you. When that was happening, when President Bush was really trying to implement that and you and your colleagues were attempting to make it happen on a large scale, he took a lot of heat from the other side of the political aisle. There were many more of the more liberal persuasion in Congress that said this will never work. This is going to force religion down people's throats. Why such pushback? And I'm just going to speculate, and you tell me if I'm wrong. Maybe this is a simplistic answer here. Is it because those individuals feel that government is the only answer and that really the only solution is a bigger government to serve more people?
I think that was definitely it for some. There's no question that some folks feel that the government really is the solution, and anything that pairs back government is bad. I think that there was also many who legitimately just misunderstood what the initiative was about. They thought that President Bush was creating a pot of funds that was going to be handed out willy-nilly to religious organizations with no respect for the constitutional lines that, you know, that I think very clearly and appropriately say government is not to fund religion, because that would be choosing, you know, one religion over another, and none of us would want that. What it does do is says that if we are going to seriously attack human need, if we're going to try to meet the deep needs of drug addicts and the homeless and work around the world to address global AIDS, that can't be through big bureaucracy. It's not going to be efficient and effective and lasting change. And so we need to welcome every willing partner, including faith-based groups, and make sure that they can partner. If that's their desire, if that's consistent with their mission, they can partner with government in a way that protects their identity while also ensuring appropriate constitutional lines. And I think even many from the political left, when they came to understand that, at least a fair number, not all, but a fair number, lined up behind that vision and were willing to support it.
Now, obviously, there's a real misunderstanding of separation of church and state in this country, and a real I think a misinterpretation of even Thomas Jefferson's words in the Danbury letter and many court rulings that, and you know, we don't have to get into this, the whole political issue here, but there's a real distortion of this idea of separation of church and state. And yet your office, correct me if I'm wrong, your office was very careful to set up some guidelines, some guardrails, so that that wouldn't happen, so that a one particular religious group, faith-based group, would not receive preferential treatment or big bucks from the government just because, let's say, they were evangelical. Am I correct?
Absolutely. And, you know, those of us in the office, and to be clear, not all were Christians in the office as well, you know, but those of us who were Christians really had this deep conviction that, you know, if government were going out and picking its favorites, and say that happened to the evangelicals while President Bush were in office, well, the next guy could come up and pick their favorites, and that might be another sect or religion. And that's what the Founding Fathers absolutely wanted to prevent. You know, it's called the Establishment Clause, because government is prevented from establishing or funding one religion over others. But when there is a clear level playing field, and within social service programs, particularly making sure that government isn't paying for Bibles or the Quran or you know, any specific acts of religious proselytization, when you create a firewall there and you're saying what government is clearly paying for are services to the homeless, helping them overcome their homelessness, to addicts overcoming addiction, you can draw those lines. And there's times when clearly there are gray areas, but I think with a careful constitutional approach, you really can draw those lines clearly. And that was a big part of the work of the office as well.
Mm-hmm. And yet it was tragic, because the media, I think, in many times distorted President Bush's intentions and your office intentions. Did they eventually come around? I'm trying to remember historically. Was there a point where the media kind of said, oh, okay, well, we get this?
So some did and some didn't. There were some groups out there like the Freedom From Religion Foundation that were continually attacking to the very last day. You know, and I don't know, you know, I don't want to judge people's motives. I don't know if they were intentionally distorting it or if they really believed, you know, what they were saying. But I would say that there was a broad consensus that, hey, this is a more effective way to get at the needs that we're trying to solve. It's you know, when we're talking about someone who's returning to society after being in prison for 10 years, just, you know, a few bureaucratic services are not going to help them to beat the odds that say they're going to reoffend and go back into prison. And so, you know, that local community touch, the love, the encouragement, the accountability that only nonprofits that are rooted in that community can provide, people say that, you know, that is necessary. And so a lot of folks came on board with that vision. And that's why President Obama actually kept the office. You know, he didn't cut it off, because he understood this was effective. And I would have some critiques for how that has been executed. But overall, there has been some good people, and they're trying to continue and build upon the best of the vision.
Mm. That's encouraging to know. My guest is Jed Medefend. As you heard, he was in the Bush administration. He worked for the White House. His role was in the White House Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives as a special assistant to President George W. Bush. He's also held a range of posts in the California legislature. Now he heads up an organization called the Christian Alliance for Orphans, which we're going to be talking about in just a minute. We're also going to be diving in to Jed's new book, Upended: How Following Jesus Remakes Your Words and Your World. And by the way, as I mentioned before, if you call in on the program today, if you have a question for Jed, we'd love to pass that along to him. Any comment for me as well. And if you call in, don't even have to go on the air. We will take your name, your number, your address down, and then we'll have a drawing at the end of the hour for three copies of this wonderful new book, Upended, written by Jed Medefend. And go ahead, tell me your co-author's name again before I mess it up.
Eric Loxmo. He's a good
Thank
man.
Thank you, Eric Loxmo. By the way, Eric Loxmo is the principal at Different Drummer, which is an L.A. and New York-based audience mobilization agency for global entertainment brands and content. He served as 10 years for a political speechwriter and press secretary on Capitol Hill. He sounds like an interesting guy as well. And Jed and Eric have come out with this great new book, Upended. More on this book in just a minute here on the Faith Radio Network. Again, jot our phone number down, 877-93-FAITH. We would love to interact with you. You can also check out our website at myfaithradio.com. Back after this break.
Hi, this is Dick Whitworth, General Manager of Faith Radio. I want to take this opportunity to again say thank you for your friendship and your support during our recent Fall Share campaign. It was an amazing show of support on behalf of Faith Radio. Thank you for praying and standing with us. You see, your support of Faith Radio reaches people for Christ and literally transforms lives all across the Upper Midwest and around the world through the Internet. Through our Bible-based preaching and family-focused teaching, Faith Radio stands for the truth and the proclamation of God's Word. Thank you for standing with us with a generous gift of support today. Whether your gift is an ongoing monthly pledge of $24 a month or a one-time gift, you can give simply and safely online at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. Thank you in advance.
Now here's more of the best of Bill Myers Live. The conversation continues right now, and we want to hear from you. Call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Now, here's Dr. Bill Meyer again on Faith Radio.
Welcome back. I want to say hi to our friends who are listening on Faith 90.5 in Duluth Superior today. Thanks so much for making us part of your weekend. They're on the beautiful shores of Lake Superior. Also, our good friends at Faith 1270 in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. We appreciate you making us part of your weekend. As you heard Morgan say there, our phone number, 877-93-FAITH. I'm going to try to drill it into your head today, 877-93-FAITH, so you can give us a call and we can give you one of those books by our guest. And, of course, if you have a question or comment for him, we would love to hear that. We're talking to Jed Medefend. He is the co-author of the new book, Upended, How Following Jesus Remakes Your Words and Your World. Before the break, Jed, we were talking about your work in President Bush's Office of Faith-Based Initiatives and an exciting work there, work that I admired. And let me just give you a personal example of something that we were talking about. I'm sure you've heard stories like this before, but we were distinguishing between a large government bureaucracy trying to help people in need versus local efforts or personal efforts. The difference, of course, being that you have this nameless, faceless government entity, cutting checks to people versus, let's say, a local church or a community organization, Salvation Army, Southern Baptists, or even an individual family helping somebody out. And my wife, several years ago, she was involved with a Hollywood Presbyterian Church in Southern California. And through a local camp, she befriended a girl from a low-income neighborhood. We called it the Hood. A lot of gang activity, fatherless family. This young woman, her mom had a drug history. And she got to know this girl, I think she was probably about 15 or 16, tried to really in some way mentor her. But then my wife went away to college on the East Coast for 4 years, lost contact with this young woman, and when she came back to Southern California, she reestablished contact. Well, by this time, this young woman had already had a first child by a boyfriend, not her husband, and went on to have a second and a third child, fatherless children, living pretty much at the poverty level. And my wife continued to go by and see this young woman and try to occasionally bring her a meal, bring her clothing for her kids, bring her Christmas gifts, and they were so appreciated by this young gal who's now, I think, in her mid to late 20s. But here's what's interesting. As thankful as she was and appreciative as she was for my wife's intervention in her life, if her government check, if her welfare check was one day late, this woman would just, I mean, she'd cuss up and down that those government people, I can't believe my check's late, and I'm going to da-da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, she'd go to that mailbox every month to get her welfare check and food stamps and the other, government assistance that she received. And it was almost, there were, and again, she had grown up in kind of a second-generation situation here, so she'd come to expect it. And there was no gratefulness. This was my entitlement. This was what government owes me. Whereas with my wife, who took that time and that built that personal relationship, there was a gratitude and a gratefulness there. And I'm sure you've heard many stories like this.
Absolutely. And it just, you know, you think about that young woman, and she had never known anything different. She had seen one way of living from her earliest childhood. So to break that kind of cycle is obviously going to take so much more than a check, or even, you know, kind of a, you know, once a week government program with a government counselor. It takes love. It takes long-term example. I mean, just seeing a healthy marriage is such a foreign thing to so many that those are the types of things that just, you know, the simple truth is government can never provide those. But the simple truth is those are the things that are absolutely most necessary if the trajectory of a life is going to change.
Hmm. All right, let's unpack your book, upend it a bit. First of all, what inspired you and Eric to tackle this topic?
Well, you know, both of us at the time were working in D.C. Eric was a political speechwriter. I was working in the White House, and we really had a sense that although both of us have been followers of Jesus all our lives, we've been Christians, at the same time, it often felt like there was this huge disconnect between the wondrous, eternal truths that Jesus taught and our daily life. When we went into the office on Monday morning, there was a disconnect there. And I would say the same at times with other aspects of life, too, our friendships and our marriages and our parenting. Not that, you know, clearly the love of Christ didn't spill into all those things. It certainly did. But in a practical sense, we asked the question, what does it look like to really live as a disciple or even an apprentice to Jesus in these activities that we spend the bulk of our time doing, both the professional communicating, the speech writing and speaking to media and those sorts of things, as well as personally in our marriage and our parenting and friendships. And that exploration sent us on this really remarkable journey where we went through the Gospels again, asking that question, what does it look like to live as an apprentice to Jesus as communicators? And what we discovered for both of us continues to really turn the way that we approach interaction, communication, influence it changes everything in a disconcerting but truly exciting way.
All right, let's talk about the way that it does change a person's life when they truly get it and they truly start living in that way.
Well, you know, one word that I would use as a key one today is the idea of connection. We are more technologically connected than ever before. You were talking earlier about the technology use in homes, and it's just become explosive. And all of us know it pervades every square inch of our lives. When we're on vacation, we've got the iPhone or BlackBerry. When we're, you know, we've got 15 minutes between dinner and evening activities, checking the emails, all those things. We're technologically connected, and yet never in history have we been less relationally connected, I would argue. And what is that? There is this deep sense of, I think, discontent in many of our lives because of that disconnection. And really, if we're going to change that, if we're going to connect with others at a deeper level, if we're going to make a more lasting influence on those that we spend time with, including our children, we need to fundamentally shift that. And what's exciting is that Jesus, who lived an incredibly hard-pressed and busy life as well, really shows us in very practical ways how to approach that, how to connect with others in a God-honoring, Christ-hearted way.
Let's talk about some of the things that we observe in Jesus' life that we can then apply to our own lives, Jed.
Well, you know, there's so many, and of course, we're just going to scratch the surface of what we explore in the book on this radio program. But the one that has been especially significant to me has been the idea of attentiveness. And, you know, there's a story in the gospel that, of course, I'd heard all my life, but re-seeing it through the lens of the question, what does it mean to communicate like Jesus? And that is the story of the woman who approached him, who had been bleeding for 12 years. She was coming to be healed. And if you remember in that story, Jesus had actually been asked to come and heal the daughter of a very influential woman. So there's this little girl dying off somewhere in the distance. The father is next to Jesus. They're rushing off. There's a crowd around them. There's noise. There's energy. There's activity. There's urgency. And yet this poor marginalized woman reaches out of the crowd and touches Jesus. And the gospel account says that that moment she is healed. She's already received the physical healing she came for. But Jesus knew that she needed more than that. And so despite the urgency of his mission at that moment to go heal that other little girl, he stopped. And in the middle of that crowd, he asked, who touched me? And then this woman steps forward, and then the Gospels describe how she told him the whole story, how she had been bleeding for 12 years and how doctors had taken all her money but had left her none the well, not healed her, and likely talking about the social rejection and all of the other things. And finally, at the end of that, after Jesus has focused his entire attention upon this one marginalized woman, then he says, "Daughter, go in peace. Your faith has made you well." And when I read that again, it just struck me that Jesus put a shocking premium on attentiveness, on giving himself wholly to the person in front of him, and that if I want to be an apprentice to him amidst this day and age of so much distraction and noise, I need to do the same. I need to put a shocking premium on attentiveness to the person that he puts in front of me.
That's a great challenge, Jed, and something that I've really, I think, been convicted of in my own life, because I, you know, working in the broadcasting business and also being a clinical psychologist, a lot of times my schedule gets very packed. I don't have a lot of margin. I also have three young children, so I'm running around here and there. And there have been some situations where, excuse me, I've come into contact with individuals, whether at work or church or other places, and I haven't really given them their due. I haven't really given them, I mean, I've been friendly, I've smiled, I've said hello, but I haven't really stopped to see, you know, how are you really doing? And I sometimes I kick myself after those situations, even sometimes in public, where maybe you're in a Walmart or a grocery store and you have an opportunity to have a conversation with someone, but you're in a hurry and there's a line behind you, and you just kind of you chuck that idea and go out to your car and drive away. And I think back and I go, oh man, if I had just spent 5 minutes, maybe I could have encouraged that person in some way. And it's great to hear you say that, you know, that's a fantastic example of, now, of course, Jesus knew that he was eventually going to heal Jairus's daughter. I mean, being God, he certainly knew that that was going to be the ultimate outcome, and perhaps his delay was not going to impact him. But that attentiveness, that fact that in that pressing crowd, he actually, you know, sensed that power go out of him and then stopped to minister to that woman and bless her. Wow, what a great example for each one of us.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it really for me has been deeply impactful. And I'll, you know, of course, I'd want to confess totally, I struggle with it too. You know, I'm struggling with when my iPhone buzzes on my hip and I'm talking with someone else, I want to check that text message. I want to get to the email. When I come home at night, I usually want to check my phone one last time before I start playing with the kids. But what I've realized is those small decisions add up to the legacy of a life, either a life that is distracted and disjointed and you know, rarely fully present to the people in front of me, or a life that is deeply rooted in the present, very present to the person in front of me. And I realized that those little decisions are actually some of the biggest ones we'll ever make.
And I'm glad to hear you talk about the tech issue, because you heard my little research report there at the beginning. I have become a real advocate of what has been referred to as clean time. I don't know if you've heard that expression, Jed, but that's when a family comes in at the end of the day, whether after school or after work, and they actually place their personal technology in a basket at the front door or in the, you know, right inside the garage when they come in, and everybody puts their personal tech down and it's off for a predetermined amount of time, perhaps between after school and dinner, between dinner and bedtime. And not only that, nobody's going on television. Nobody's turning on the computer to, you know, check their email or play an online video game. This is just a family spending quality time together and really getting to know each other, because they're so, I think I've seen so many families so disconnected, especially as the kids move into the junior high and high school years, and it's a real tragedy. So I think clean time is, at least on the family level, one possible answer. But and then the other, of course, is really maintaining a Sabbath. And I don't know if you get into that in your book, Jed, but that's another issue I think American Christians have unfortunately given short shrift to.
I could not agree with you more, Bill, on all of those counts. I think establishing practices, habits of times when we disconnect from the umbilical cord of technology, the little stimulants that provides, and so we can show ourselves that we aren't completely dependent on it and that we can take times away from it every day. I think that's a great idea, you know, maybe in the evenings when people get home from school and work and you have a certain block of time where, you know, everyone agrees to being off technology and unplugged and present to each other. And then on Sunday can be a great day for that as well. My wife and I, as part of our practice of Sabbath, which I completely agree with you there, and we actually devote two chapters to these things called time away from the crowd. But part of our Sabbath is not checking email or text messages so that we can be more fully present with the Lord and to each other.
Now, Jed, let's take a quick break here. But when we come back, we're going to get into some more practical ideas on how we as true followers of Jesus Christ can remake our worlds. Our guest once again is Jed Medefend. He is the author, co-author of this wonderful new book, Upended, How Following Jesus Remakes Your Words and Your World. And again, if you'd like a copy of the book, we'd love to have you give us a call. As long as you give us your name, address, and phone number, we'll enter you into a drawing at the end of the hour for that book. You can call us at 877-93-FAITH, 877-93-FAITH. And also, if you have a question for Jed, maybe applying to your own life, whether it be your family life, your work life, your church life, he'd love to answer that. So give us a call, 877-93-FAITH. We'll be back after this quick break here on the Faith Radio Network.
You're listening to A Best of Bill Meyer Live. Why commit to something as important as college without first getting a preview? You and your student are invited for a sample of University of Northwestern St. Paul during fall preview days. Half-day visits are October 17th and 18th, and full-day visits are November 1st, 8th, or 15th. Visit classes, worship in chapel, eat in the cafeteria, tour the Lakeside campus. This is your preview. UNWSP.edu. University of Northwestern, St. Paul. Your life on purpose.
Are you going through something today that just seems impossible to figure out?
Are you discouraged and looking for a place to turn?
Right now, hundreds of friends across your community would be honored to lift you up in prayer.
You can connect with them today and share what's on your heart completely anonymously.
At myfaithradio.com, just click on the Prayer Works button. Find encouragement as others lift your situation up to the one who has it all under control.
Prayer Works at myfaithradio.com.
On the next Everyday Relationships.
October is Clergy Appreciation Month, and it's easy to just see that put-together person on the stage that encourages us in our faith. But pastors are up against a lot, spiritually, emotionally, and even physically. So how do we encourage them? Pastor H.B. London will be here to give us some tips on how we can show our appreciation for our pastor, not just this month, but all year long.
Everyday Relationships. Real life, real talk. Weekdays at 4 on Faith Radio. To A Best of Bill Meyer Live. Now back to Dr. Bill Meyer Live on Faith Radio.
And welcome back. Thanks for spending part of your Saturday with us in the Upper Midwest. We appreciate you wherever you might be listening today. Perhaps you're in Madison, Wisconsin, listening on Faith 1190. Or maybe you're one of our good friends listening on Faith 1200 in the Fargo-Moorhead area. Thanks for making Faith Radio a part of your weekend. Make sure you join us Monday through Friday for some of our incredible Bible teaching, some of the best Bible teachers in the world on Faith Radio, bar none. And then, of course, our live programs. We have Connecting Faith with my friend Neil Stavem, also Susie Larson's Live the Promise every afternoon at 3, and our new show, which is Real Relationships, or Everyday Relationships, I'm sorry, with Greg Smalley and Susie Larson together. What a fun show that has become. And if you've got issues in your family with coworkers, Greg would be more than happy to answer your questions. That's every day at 4 p.m. here on Faith Radio. You can find the entire schedule, myfaithradio.com, myfaithradio.com. My guest this hour is Jed Medefend. He is the co-author of the book, Upended, How Following Jesus Remakes Your Words and Your World. And again, we have three copies of the books to give away. If you would like to have a copy, give us a call. Give us your name, address, phone number. We'll enter you into a drawing at the end of the hour and be happy to send you one of those three books. And, of course, if you've got a question for Jed, we'd like to hear that as well. Now, Jed, in the book, you refer to North American Christians as rather predictable people. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, I think just so often we fall into echoing the broader culture around us. If you look at your average American that's not a Christian, and then look at the person who, you know, attends church from time to time and would name the name of Christ, you could probably predict what both of them are going to be doing, and it's going to look a lot the same. And that's not all bad. There's a lot of things that are neutral or even good in typical American culture. But I think that if we are really aligning our lives with Christ rather than the culture, it's going to look more different than it typically does.
I would venture to say it would look countercultural in many cases, because the culture tells us that the values that are most important are popularity, success, power, achievement, stuff, physical attractiveness. I mean, that's the drumbeat that we hear from the mass media, that our kids are hearing from their peers. And unfortunately, sometimes they're even hearing it from us as their parents, maybe more on the achievement end of things, that, you know, that's what it's all about. But if we turn to what Jesus says is important, it's sacrifice, it's service, it's putting others ahead of self, it's love. And it seems to me that if we really are going to stand apart and really be the body of Christ, those are the attributes that we need to be exhibiting in our lives, rather than those cultural attributes that are, again, sort of causing us to look like everybody else.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's I feel like a lot of Christians know that. I mean, I would have absolutely said that growing up myself. And yet it often feels hard to figure out, okay, so how am I supposed to look different? I mean, do I, you know, start driving on the left side of the road rather than the right side of the road? And just, you know, and of course it's not that. And it's not necessarily even big decisions like, you know, I'm going to go live in a commune and be totally countercultural. It's often very small decisions that add up to a life that ultimately looks and feels profoundly different. Now, you know, I would say that for those people I know who are really true disciples, true apprentices of Jesus, from a distance, their life doesn't necessarily look so radically different. But as you get to know them, you begin to feel like, you know, this person listens to me like no one else does. This person is really as interested in my concerns as their own concerns. And it's subtle things like that that really add up to something that is indeed profoundly countercultural.
And you said earlier the importance of attentiveness. You pointed out how Jesus was attentive in his earthly ministry. You mentioned the woman with the internal bleeding that touched him in the crowd. I was thinking of Zacchaeus up there on the tree, the tax collector, and, you know, here's this huge crowd around him, and Jesus looks up and sees this little guy up there and says, hey, come on down, I'm going to have dinner at your house. I mean, it's incredibly attentive. So attentiveness is one. You say in the book, presence conveys value. Maybe flesh that out for us a little bit.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a great story I love that we share in the book. Sir William Osler, he is considered the father of modern medicine, and he was actually visiting a children's hospital regularly, and he noticed that there was one little girl that none of the other children would spend time with. And he asked one of the nurses about that, and she explained to Dr. Osler that no one ever came to visit this little girl, that apparently her mother was dead and her father worked or lived somewhere far off, and so he almost never came to see her. And so all the other children sensed this little girl had little value, didn't matter, because no one came to visit her, so they would not spend time with her or talk with her. And so Sir William Osler actually went over to this little girl's bed. He sat down next to her. He began talking with her, asking her questions. He even brought out his stethoscope, and he listened to her little dolly's heart. And then finally, just after, you know, I don't know, it was maybe about 10 minutes or so, he says to her, loud enough for the others to hear, he said, oh, I have so enjoyed spending this time with you. And mind you, don't tell anyone else our secret. And then he just walked off. And even as he was leaving that children's ward, he looked back over his shoulder and saw all the other children gathering around this little girl. And it's just a beautiful little picture of how the gift of presence, the gift of attentiveness, the gift of question asking, to others who often aren't asked questions because people don't, you know, think that what they have to say matters. When we make choices like that, it conveys value. It says this human soul is of eternal worth, and it helps that person feel the weight of their own worth, as well as sends that signal to everyone else around.
That's beautiful. We've got about 2 minutes left before the end of the hour, Jed. Let me ask you this. You talk about authenticity in the book, and you say it's kind of a buzzword in our culture. Is authenticity done correctly, and how do we do it? How do we live it out in the authentic way that we should?
Well, you know, you're right. It is definitely a buzzword, and you know, you can't hardly hear a reality show or a talk show without people using that term, talking about how they want to be authentic or are authentic. But ultimately, I think that just testifies to how absent true authenticity is. And even within the church, so often we put on the painted on smile and everything's great, and yet you look at Jesus and you realize that he continually spoke of both the beauty and the ache of life. He did that with himself, both, you know, in terms of his celebrating with the disciples when they came back victorious, but also shared of his sorrow at the tomb of Lazarus, weeping publicly, or in the Garden of Gethsemane, asking the disciples to be with him, to pray with him. And that's really a reflection of the Psalms, which themselves have that beautiful celebration and joy, and the aching authenticity of hurt and pain. And so if we as Christians really want to follow Jesus in this, we will speak of both the beauty and the ache of our world, the beauty and the ache of our own lives. And I think when we're willing to do that, that will give our lives that ring of authenticity that is indeed so rare today.
Mm. Jed, as we mentioned, we've just barely scratched the surface of this book, and if you're open to it, maybe sometime later this fall, I'd love to have you back and unpack some of the other principles, and you've got some great stories, other wonderful examples, and I think application that all of us can use, so would you consider that?
Absolutely, would love to.
Now, give me your website for the Christian Alliance for Orphans, the organization you head up.
It is CAFO.org, so CAFO.org.
CAFO.org, the Christian Alliance for Orphans. Jed is the president of that organization. Once again, the book is called Upended, How Following Jesus Remakes Your Words and Your World. Jed, thanks so much for your time today, for your heart. We just pray that God will open even new doors for you to get the word out on this very critical message.
Thanks so much, Bill. It's really been good being with you today.
Jed Medefend, who has co-authored this great book, Upended, How Following Jesus Remakes Your Words and Your World. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Bill Meyer. We have AP News coming up next. Stick with us.
Nothing's changed, except maybe the school picture. You never, ever stop learning.
At Northwestern, you'll find a culture of Christ-centered learning that will advance your academic knowledge, spiritual grounding, leadership, and service. In fact, 96% of graduates say they're well-prepared to face the challenges of a changing world.
Keep learning with Northwestern's undergrad and graduate programs, unwsp.edu.
University of Northwestern, St. Paul. Learn. Lead. Invest. Impact.
As Julie Nelson explains, there's a real mission behind Faith Radio's The Conversation.
It's fun to be part of something where you know the roots are all the same. Faith in God and improving our walk. Whatever the topic is, gardening or marriage or parenting, the overall message is, how can we become better Christians and have a stronger faith?
And that mission continues. Now hear Faith Radio's The Conversation at its new time. Noon each Saturday and 6 p.m. each Sunday.